Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our new presenting sponsor for the podcast. If you're an avid fantasy baseball player, you're going to love Pennant Wars. It's an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or, like some teams did last week, make blockbuster trades with other owners. Its in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons pitch by pitch, and the entire season plays out over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, meaning you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or, I won't encourage it, but I know it happens, we've all been there, even at work. So there's only a couple months left in the fantasy baseball season, but you can get your fantasy baseball fix year-round with Pennant Wars. As soon as one season ends and a champion is crowned, the next season begins the following day. So head over to PennantWars.com and try it out for free today. That's PennantWars.com. Try it out for free. So this episode we recorded last week on Tuesday, just after the trade deadline. I went on vacation the rest of the week, so that's the reason you're just hearing it now. Brett and Mike are on vacation this week, so they'll be back, and we'll record a new episode next week. But we wanted to take a look at all 30 teams, at some of the developments that have occurred over the last couple of weeks with each franchise, and some of the notable fantasy situations that we thought were worth taking a look at. So that's what we covered in this episode. We'll be back with a new episode next week, but hope you enjoy it. Here it is, episode 100 of Flags Fly Forever, coming your way right now.
Who looked like a trade target before his ERA kept, you know, sailing like the house and up, or the balloons and up.
Good evening and welcome to episode 100 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and as always, I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Guys, we did it, 100 episodes. How do you feel?
I feel pretty great. I feel very accomplished, although I have not been on for 100 episodes, so you should probably ask Mike.
I probably missed a couple, though. So the show is 100 episodes old, and I can't believe when we started doing this back with Mao, it was like 2 years ago. I can't believe that we would have made it to 100, but here we are.
Yeah.
It's been a good ride. I can say that. Here's to another 100 after this, so very excited. We have a ton to talk about because the trade deadline happened, and we've written upwards of 25 transaction analysis. Is that even a word? Analysis?
Up analyses.
Analyses.
There we go. We have like 20 or 30 of them up right now at Baseball Prospectus. We're going to run through some of the bigger ones and the fantasy impact of some of these deals. A lot of that's going to be covered on the expert fab side of things as well, which is where we're going to start tonight. You can check out Mike's latest edition. It's up at BP right now if you want to follow along as we talk about some of the bigger names. You guys are in third place in labor mixed right now, and that's where we'll start because you guys made one pretty significant move here in picking up David Dahl this week.
Yeah, I was very, very surprised. I figured, you know, and Mike and I both talked about this before we put in the bid. I mean, we pretty much maxed out on both Bregman and Dahl in our bids. And we ended up with him. And I think you absolutely can make the argument that that Dahl is a better own the rest of this year than Bregman, even though I think I still slightly prefer Bregman. But, you know, a guy who is Looking at likely playing time the rest of the year in Colorado, and for a Colorado team that plays a noticeable number of more no, that was terrible English. who plays a noticeably skewed schedule towards home games rather than away games, which is always good for Rockies hitters. So yeah, I'm very excited about Dahl. Hopefully he gives us a little bit of an offensive spark that we need so that we can try to do the impossible and catch Todd Zola of Masters Ball.
No, I was just gonna add that's all right. And you know, we went through this last year when we spent the end of our fab on Kyle Schwarber, and I will say we were in a better position last year because we were in first and we were being chased, but this was the right move. It didn't make sense to be conservative or cautious. One thing that's hard to predict in expert leagues is there's an expert who's at the bottom or toward the bottom who has a lot of fab. He didn't do anything. For all I know, he might not be paying attention, but it's very difficult to just assume that and bid low. So, you know, if I had that crystal ball and knew that this expert wasn't participating the rest of the year, I might have bid 10 to 15. We might have got Dahl, but you can't really look at it that way.
Yeah, we talked about Dahl and Bregman a little bit last week and what some of the strategy was going to be from a bid standpoint for you guys. Were you surprised the number was only 33 on Bregman just because of the positional eligibility? He's likely going to be able to, you know, be at shortstop and qualify there right away. I know he's gotten off to a bit of a slow start here, but still, were you surprised it was only 33 or?
Yeah, I wonder whether the slow start played a little bit of a role there. I mean, I think it's easy for us to say that, you know, 15 or 18 at-bats or however many at-bats he had before moves ran should not affect your outlook on a player. And it really should not. But there are you know, owners out there who let that affect them, and yeah, you know, maybe it did a little bit. It certainly didn't for us, but my guess would have been somewhere in the 40 to 45 range if I had to have guessed what his winning bid was going to be.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from, I think it was Darren Willman or Mike Petriello, one of the BAM guys on Twitter, had that Bregman had like five balls he hit 95 miles an hour or higher with an exit velocity, and none of them went for hits, but the league average on those types of balls is like 530 something. So it's going to turn around for Bregman. He's too good.
His BABIP, the last I looked, his BABIP was like 50, like 0.050, which, yeah, you know, even if you're not a BABIP believer and you're not even looking at the harder soft contact, he's due some hits. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's not like he's striking out every single time he's going up there, so I wouldn't be worried.
No, he's got eight strikeouts and 30 plate appearances, and you know, yeah, that's not, I'd expect a better rate from him once he gets adjusted, but that's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of in first 30 plate appearances.
Yeah, if he had 15 or 17 strikeouts, that's when you might look and say, oh, gee, you know, he's overmatched, he's not ready, but he'll probably be fine.
This is where we kindly remind everyone that not every player is Carlos Correa. Like, right when they get called up, they don't immediately become a fantasy superstar. So it might take some time for Bregman, and that's understandable and maybe expected. Alex Dickerson went for 26. The Fangraphs crew, Jason Collette and Paul Sporer. We talked about Dickerson last week, so unless either of you guys have anything new to add with him, I don't think there's much else to talk about. He's hit a bunch of home runs. The playing time's going to be there. I guess we could talk a little bit about the Matt Kemp trade since we're kind of in that territory. What do you guys think of that move from both a Padre and a Atlanta perspective on that deal?
Well, it was, you know, really for the Braves, they were partially made that trade because they were trying to just simply extricate themselves, you know, from a situation where, you know, player had served his domestic violence suspension and just wanted to be done with that. You know, from a baseball standpoint, it's kind of interesting because of what it looks like the Braves are trying to do. You know, they acquired Kemp. They were tied to Brian McCann. It looks like they're actually trying to bring in some players who, you know, could be serviceable or could be maybe, you know, more than just replacement level. You know, I know that the, you know, Matt Kemp's defense and what that means to his wins above replacement have been kind of skewed to death, but you know, Matt Kemp, if you don't believe in UZR, if you look at his recent numbers and think maybe he could have kind of a dead cap bounce, can be a good hitter when everything's going right for him. I don't want to oversell that. It's a lot of that's home runs. But that's probably what the Braves are looking at. I know some people think the Braves are going to try to bring up, you know, Swanson and Albies and some of these other kids next year, not to win, but to surround them a couple veterans and actually try to be competitive as opposed to doing what they're doing this year and not doing that so much.
Yeah, when the cost is negligible, it makes sense why they did it, I think. If you can get a bat like that for nothing, you might as well take a shot. Brett, anyone else you want to talk about from the mixed side here? Because there were a couple interesting names that did get picked up. But
I'll talk about two guys, one who we put in a contingent bid on and one who I absolutely adore, even though we did not bid on him. Martin Prado was the guy who we put in a contingent bid for. And he went for $7. I think our bid was $3. He just keeps hitting, and you know he's not really a great fit for our team, since we're kind of dead in the water in batting average, and that's really Prado's bread and butter. But I think I think he's someone who absolutely needs to be owned in a league like this, and he's someone who's definitely worth starting the rest of the way. The other guy I want to talk about is Tyler Skaggs, who at some point will give up a run in 2016, although it is yet to be determined when that will be. He's not going to win any games because the Angels are terrible and their bullpen is befitting of a terrible team, but man, he's looked really, really good since he's come back. His last couple of rehab starts, he had put up some huge strikeout numbers, and the stuff just looks crisp. It looks back, and for someone who is as good of a prospect as Skaggs was, it's really exciting. And you know, for a better Angels team, Skaggs could. You know, Skaggs could settle in as a solid SP2. I still believe in his talent in the long run. He won't be that this year because, like I said, he won't get any wins. But he's definitely someone who needs to be owned at this point in pretty much every league, and someone who really needs to be held dearly in keeper leagues and dynasty formats.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Skaggs on last week's show on the American League side of things. But, yeah, the only question I have long-term is durability. The stuff is good. The command's great. The strikeout numbers were impressive before he got called up in the minors. So I agree with you 100% there. Mike, anyone else that you want to talk about on the mixed side here with labor?
Just quickly, kind of interesting to me that Mike Podhorzer of Fangraphs is going with this all-closer strategy. He picked up both Jake Barrett and Tony Watson for eight apiece, and as I noted in the piece, he now has six closers. He obviously doesn't have them all active, but the really weird thing about this is he's already first in saves. So it's kind of strange that he basically is in this position where he should or has to make a trade. He's tied for third with us as we're talking right now, so... we might go the other way just because we lost Wade Davis and Andrew Miller should be the closer, but the Indians are kind of being coy about what they're going to do with him. But I just found that interesting that he went that route, and I'm fine with doing that in a standard league. It's kind of weird in an expert league where there aren't a lot of trades, and Mike isn't Fred Zinke. He's not the most aggressive guy when it comes to trading.
I love that someone's employing a really weird strategy. Those things always, I'm a huge fan of those because they're fascinating to me. On the NL side, the final number on the Aroldis Chapman bidding, $605 out of a $1,000 fab. Mike, is that too much? Just right? How do you view it?
Well, it's probably fine, and you know, part of the reason it's fine is because at the time of the bid, there's a difference. It didn't look like a lot of people were going to be coming over into the National League. And in an NL only, it's not just, even if there were, it's not just the saves. He offers a lot in strikeouts, whip, ERA, less so. But this isn't just some middling closer who's going to get you saves on a good team. This is Aroldis Chapman. So I'm fine with the bid, in part because he's so talented, but also because it didn't seem like there were going to be a lot of players coming over from the American League. And, you know, who's the best player who's going to be bid on, you know, next week who came over? I mean, there's some decent buys. I just don't see anyone who's like a high impact bat, or, you know, this year's Yoenis Cespedes didn't come over to the National League.
It's probably like Rich Hill or Matt Moore,
or maybe Josh Reddick if you need the bat, but yeah. these just aren't, you know, last year's Cespedes, you know, Brett remembers I was first in the NL, and, you know, we were discussing, and I made the wrong call. You know, we were discussing if I should buy Cespedes or Reyes, and I took Reyes because I need the speed, which turned out to just not work out for me. It really didn't matter because I was first in power anyway, but that option, you know, that killer option in the National League just isn't there this year. So it's probably Chapman.
Brett, I know you'd probably debate that because you love Eduardo Nunez, and he went for nearly $500 in FAB. So tell us a little bit more about our boy Eduardo Nunez.
I do love Eduardo Nunez.
As you should.
He's one of those guys who I've kind of always been drawn towards as the, you know, if he ever got a real opportunity guy. And, you know, it looked like in spurts he might get some opportunity over the past couple of years, but once he started playing every day this year, I kind of jumped in a couple of different places, and he's been way, way better than I could have even imagined. He's running like crazy. He's on pace to steal 40 bases. He's hitting for average. He's hitting for even a little bit of power. He's just been kind of fantasy waiver wire gold at this point. I don't know whether he's going to be the player that ranks highest among in fantasy earnings among the people who were not drafted in mixed leagues, or maybe even in, Mike, was he even taken in the AL only leagues?
Well, I know he was taken in Labor AL because Tristan Cockcroft on their podcast has mentioned a few times how he took him either as a dollar or a reserve pick and traded him. So, but yeah, he was a $1 or reserve AL only guy. He was not somebody who was even getting pushed as a speed option, you know, up to $4 or $5. He was an end game play.
Yeah, and but yeah, in San Francisco, I mean, we'll get into the sort of team specific outlook. But he's going to play, and he's going to be good. So yeah, I'm not concerned about his. I'm not concerned about his talent level at this point, even though I don't expect him to continue performing quite the way he's been.
I'm not the only one who made the joke, but congratulations to Eduardo Nunez on his future World Series MVP award in about 3 months. So congratulations, Eduardo. You've made it. Braden Shipley for $63. There were some other interesting guys, but Mike, I'll throw it over to you. I don't know if you want to talk about maybe the process behind the Chapman and Nunez bidding, or what your approach is going to be moving forward. I guess I'll open up the board to you here to take us wherever you want.
It's probably better to go into the article and read it, but the nutshell summary of the process in the NL, teams that had money agreed with me, with the exception of Derek Carty, who's in first place and had the most FAB. But, you know, Derek is dead last in saves. He's been dumping the category all year. So Chapman, for him to gain a point, you know, maybe two if everything broke right, really didn't make sense. Whereas for a lot of teams in what is a tight race in the middle, bidding aggressively on Chapman was a fairly solid play. The other thing I'll say about the FAB and the learning experience I had, this is the first time I've ever used 1,000, you know, in FAB, and Brett, I think that's the same for you in Tout Mixed. I don't know if you've played with 1,000 before or not.
I have not, no. It's my first time as well.
My experience with this is that I probably would have, there's a couple guys I would have spent less on earlier in the year and saved my fab, not so much because Chapman or Nunez would have saved my team, but because there's a lot of variance in players and some of the best players I picked up, like I picked up Alex Dickerson a couple weeks ago for 14 out of 1,000. And, you know, I'm not that high on Dickerson, but based on what he can do, that's a bargain. And in a league like Tower, you can stash guys and who've been in the minors or in the minors for a couple weeks before they come up. There's almost no need once that, you know, mediocre pitcher comes up and you think, oh, I have to spend 80 or 100 on him. It's just probably not going to change your season. And there isn't anything in an only that you missed where that guy's going to help you more than the guy you get for 10 or 15 later. It's really random.
Yeah. So Derek, who's in first place, he didn't bid on anybody. He still has a little over $700 worth of fab left. So he really has control of the board next week with guys like Reddick and Rich Hill and Matt Moore coming into the picture. So he's in a pretty good spot right now, I would say.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what he'll, you know, I wonder what he'll do just because he has Kershaw. That seems to be a theme for teams in first. He could go after Rich Hill, but, you know, Hill's injured himself. He could go after Matt Moore. My feeling is Reddick might be the best play, but Derek might need the pitching a little bit more. So he has an interesting decision in front of him come Sunday.
Yep. Brett, anyone else on the NL side that you want to discuss, or do you want to go back over to the American League side?
No one else worth discussing for me.
All right, let's talk about Melvin Upton, because Mike and I talked about it last week, but we didn't talk about it with you. Melvin Upton, surprisingly good year, power speed combo. I don't know what else to say at this point. He's just hitting the ball and stealing bases. That's what he does.
Yeah, he's been quite good, huh? This was unexpected.
He was a guy I wanted to sneak in tout NL, and he's one of those people that Lenny Melnick of Roto Experts just had to have. So I pushed him up to a silly price, and then I just let him go because I knew Lenny would have probably just bid like 20 or whatever he had left, and I'm like, whatever. So I had a hunch on him. I didn't have this hunch that he would be this player, but I thought he would, you know, be decent and, you know, get enough at bats to be productive. But the power is really what I didn't see coming with him.
No. Mike, when we look at same thing that we did on the NL side, but on the American League side, there are still teams that have over $1,000 to spend. So this is going to be fun coming up.
Yeah, there's some you can reclaim on injured players, and it looks like some people made some reclaims. So there should be some fun battles. Jonathan Lucroy is a great add, and, you know, in any league is available, but in an AL only with two catchers, that's just a godsend to get a guy like that. So, you know, the question there is, do you go after Lucroy, who is the biggest boost at a position, or do you perhaps go after someone else who might have a raw impact that's a little bit higher? So, yeah, it's going to be a fun week looking at the AL. And I should kick off next week by saying both Brett and I are on vacation, so George will be writing the Fab blog, and he'll get to write about all of the exciting scenarios that play out on Sunday.
Hell yeah, Brandon Guyer time. Oh, wait, no, he was still in the American League. Oh, man, I was wrong. Forgot about that. Tampa Bay. Yeah, I'll have that column. That's going to be fun. I'm excited for that. Brett, anyone you want to talk about? Lucas Harrell is really exciting.
No, he's not. Okay. No, not really. I Yan Gomes for $1 is kind of interesting, just because you don't know whether he's going to come back or not. And even if he comes back for like 2 weeks at the end of September, that's probably a really well spent dollar.
In a two catcher, yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to our main sort of top. But before we do that, I do want to touch on one current events thing, and that's Andrew Benintendi getting called up by the Red Sox. And I guess I'll start with you, Brett, since you've done more of the prospect end of things with us. You're our guru from that standpoint. But what are your impressions of Benintendi so far? He's a guy who's just dominated minor leagues throughout the past 2 years since getting drafted. But what are your thoughts on Benintendi, and what type of an impact are you expecting from him over the final 2 months here?
Honestly, I'm not expecting that much of an impact from him from a fantasy standpoint. I think I don't think he's quite ready. He's been very advanced for the minors for what he's for his experience level. I mean, he's sort of getting the Michael Conforto treatment, which he probably should given his minor league performance. But Conforto came up right around this time last year, and he was pretty good. He was probably a middle of the road mixed league outfielder, maybe slightly below. But I just think that I don't know. I think having as little AA experience as Benintendi has, even though he was really good there, I think there's going to be an adjustment period. I think he's going to be very good long term, but by the time he adjusts, the season might be close to over. So I'm very high on him long term, but I'm not that bullish on him for 2016.
All right, so we're going to go team by team. Just we'll touch on every situation, and since we kind of hit on the Red Sox a little bit there, we'll go to the American League East first. And Mike, anything else with either? I'll let you go on the Red Sox here. Is there anyone else that you want to discuss? Because the Red Sox, really interestingly enough, just kind of stood pat here at the deadline.
Yeah, I don't see anything. Well, Kimbrel, it's not a trade, but getting Craig Kimbrel back will obviously help. And if you had Brad Ziegler, feel free to drop him in a shallower league. But yeah, there wasn't anything there from a trade perspective that jumped out. Joe Kelly was options. So Ben Carsley, if you're listening, I'm making a sad face for you. I don't think Ben listens to this show. So
if he does, he's asleep by now. I'm just throwing that out there. All right, Brett, the Orioles, they made a couple of minor moves, depending on how you feel about Ricky Nolasco, but they did some things. I think we can say that.
They did. I'm really curious to see how they're going to use Steve Pierce after this. They could always just stick him in left. I don't think Hyun-Soo Kim has done poorly enough to deserve that. Then again, I also think Steve Pierce has been too good to just play him against left-handed pitching at this point. My guess is they'll probably spread him around and he'll play four or so times a week, including every time against lefties. But it's a really good landing spot for him from a park standpoint. It's just you kind of wanted to see him land with the team that was going to play him closer to every day.
Oh,
other than that. No, I don't know. No one, Ricky Nolasco. No.
Did they trade for Ricky? I can't even remember. They got Wade Miley. I know that. And Wade Miley's terrible for the most part. But, hey, Dylan Bundy's pitching well. That's a thing.
He's been awesome. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. All right, Mike, next up we have the, I'll go to the Yankees because they basically sold every single piece they had, pretty much.
Yeah, that's a long one, and Brett and I might need to, tag team that one. So, yeah, I'm watching them now, and they're getting clobbered. This is Tuesday as I'm talking. They're losing 7-0 to the Mets, which is not really fair because Tanaka's pitching and he's fine. But the Yankees trade Ivan Nova to the Pirates, and that kind of opens up some space. I heard a very today was one of my office days, and I heard a very long interview on WFAN, which I normally would avoid like the plague, with Brian Cashman, and it was a very good insight into from a baseball perspective of why they're rebuilding, what they're doing, what they're looking to do for the future, how things have changed, and they can't just spend a bunch of money like they used to in the old days. And it's a lot of fans have that expectation of the Yankees. It's like, why don't they have a $250-300 million payroll? But he really did a good job of laying that out. So a lot of the Yankee impact, you're looking at people who aren't going to have impact this year. Again, Dellin Betances closes. He moves up a lot based on that. He already was was valuable in all formats, but he certainly gains value. I'm not really clear, and I don't think this has changed. Von Nova's spot is open. You know, looking at this lineup, you know, if you're looking just for right now for fantasy, Aaron Hicks is the guy who I know he hasn't done much, and these are always the kind of things you have to look for in these situations. He's the guy who could get a little bit of a boost because they're going to play him. They're going to want to kind of try to see what they have with him and figure out if he's part of the next Yankee team, even if it's as a fourth outfielder. So he'll get some regular at-bats. He's still kind of a deep mix or even below that guy for me. Yeah. This just isn't an exciting team for 16. You know, we can talk about, you know, some of the players that they picked up. You know, Clint Frazier, I'm a big fan of. The Mike Trout comparisons are obviously silly, but, you know, Frazier's a fine, decent player in his own right. Dylan Tate, I would say don't sleep on him. Cashman also had some pretty good explanations based on his scouting reports about why Tate's velocity was down and how it actually picked up as the season went along. I still see him as a project, but I saw some people completely writing Tate off, and to me that's a mistake. So, yeah, the Yankees have a really interesting team in that they have a young core that you wouldn't expect. Oh, and the other player who I didn't mention, Gary Sanchez, looks like he'll be up. He's somebody who you'll definitely want to, I would say, even grab preemptively in pretty much any two-catcher league.
Yeah, Sanchez is coming up tomorrow, so as you listen to this on Wednesday, he'll probably be in the lineup. Brett, Clint Frazier, very exciting. This is good. This is good.
Yeah, he's going to be so good. He's just going to hit lots of home runs, and Yankee fans are going to absolutely love him.
He's not my Trout, but he's damn good.
I was
going
to say, the Trout comparison is damn silly. Good.
No, any Trout comparison is stupid, but Frazier could be really, really good.
Yeah, Clint Frazier is fantastic. Let's move to Tampa Bay because they did some stuff, and Brett, I guess the most notable move they made was dealing Matt Moore to the Giants. That kind of changed things up.
Yeah, so if you're a fan of Matt Andrees, then this really gets your gears grinding a bit. But no, other than that, I mean, they'll get Matt Duffy. Matt Duffy will play. One of the most noticeable things about Tampa now, and I think we saw it a little bit with Danny Duffy's start last night, is that with Guyer and Pierce no longer there, they are a pretty vulnerable lineup against left-handed pitching. They used to be a very good lineup against left-handed pitching, but that clearly is no longer the case. So keep that in mind when using pitchers against the Rays. But yeah, really not a whole lot to see there.
Yeah, Tampa's lineup is pretty abysmal, which stinks because Evan Longoria is having maybe the best year of his career.
He's been fantastic.
Yeah, best year in a long time. So, rounding out the American League East, Mike, the Toronto Blue Jays. We talked a little bit about Melvin Upton a few times, but they added some pieces, most notably in the rotation here, which is big because they're probably at some point going to lose Aaron Sanchez, at least in the rotation down the stretch here.
That's the big news out of a lot of their trades, and I'll save the, you know, what happened with the Pirates and, you know, Drew Hutchison for the Pirates. But Francisco Liriano at some point steps in for Sanchez, or maybe they go with six man in the short term. I think it's more likely that Sanchez just goes to the bullpen and Liriano slides in. I don't want any part of Liriano. He wasn't even doing well in Pittsburgh, and that's a good park for pitchers. I don't want any part of him in the AL East in Toronto. They acquired, you know, Mike Bolsinger. They acquired Scott Feldman. A lot of depth moves there, which really with the team they had made a lot of sense. I didn't see a need for them to go out and, you know, get a big offensive upgrade. And their pitchers have been doing it all year. You know, you were right, George, about Jay Happ. He's been terrific.
I've hit on a few random ones, and that was one of them. So,
well done,
Jay Happ. Who knew? Brett, the American League Central. Let's talk about we can start with the White Sox maybe, but I want to get your take on what Cleveland did, because they're maybe the most interesting team with adding Andrew Miller and some of the other stuff that they did. Cleveland, time to get excited, or what do you think?
It's they you know, Andrew Miller is a big deal, and Mike's right, they are being a little coy about how they're going to use him, but I can't imagine that he's not going to be the closer with Cody Allen shifting to the setup role. I'd almost be curious to see if they are the team that sort of breaks the mold a little bit as far as having a single closer. Terry Francona is a little he's the kind of manager who I could see doing that with this group if anyone's going to. Miller is awesome. Guyer, we just talked about, he'll come over and play against lefties. This probably means a little bit less playing time for Rajai Davis. Other than that, Jose Ramirez is probably going to play third base now with Juan Uribe getting DFA'd. And, that's sort of the way things shake. I'm not missing any Cleveland acquisitions, am I?
No, and they also have some guy named Francisco Lindor who's pretty damn good, I hear.
He's boring.
Yeah, he's just every day just solid. It's, highlight reel plays. Ugh, gross.
Who wants that?
By the way, I think Francona managed Andrew Miller briefly. I might be wrong, but I feel like he did towards the end of his tenure in Boston. I can't remember. Maybe that was the Bobby V year. I don't remember, but maybe.
I forgot that Miller was drafted ahead of Kershaw.
Yeah, that'll make you think twice.
Somebody posted that today. They posted the list of people drafted below him. Miller's obviously worked out, but when he was drafted, people thought he was going to be an ace starter, like a 1-1.
Yeah. I guess this is a vote of confidence in Tyler Naquin that they traded Clint Frazier.
Nah, no, I wouldn't read that much into it.
Okay.
From what they said about Naquin, it sounds like they said that this year he'll still kind of cycle through, and that next year he may see an expanded role.
Yeah, I'm not saying I agree with that, but I think that maybe plays into it. I don't know. I don't know if I would have traded Clint Frazier. I don't know if I could have done it. He's pretty awesome. Mike, the White Sox, were you surprised they didn't deal Chris Sale? Because it seems as though they were selling at a time when his value was the lowest it could be, maybe.
I'm not surprised, just because big deals like that, or even beyond, the clubhouse and so with him, big deals like that, blockbusters that change your entire franchise, are really difficult to make. I know the Phillies did it with Cole Hamels, but that was a little bit different in that he was the last piece, and Sale's contract is much more favorable than Hamels's was. I know Jose Quintana, it was another player they talked about. I don't see how you move those guys. Teams decided that they just weren't going to pay that price for Chris Sale. So no, I'm not surprised. I know some people are kind of outraged, but that tends to snowball. The guy I really thought, I know he hasn't been great, but the guy I really thought might get traded was David Robertson, just given some of the prices that have been paid for relievers. But again, he struggled a little bit, so that wasn't too shocking either.
Brett, the Detroit Tigers, I don't think they really did much of anything now that I look at it. They got JD Martinez coming back, though, which is, I guess, good.
They do, but yeah. He's good. Yep. But no, nothing for the Tigers.
All right, I'll give you another team then. Kansas City, because Kelvin Herrera is now closing, I believe. They're in an interesting spot because it looks like they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they were rumored to be selling, and that one Wade Davis injury kind of put a little bit of a damper on that. But I don't know. I mean, Mike, do you expect Wade Davis to pitch again this year?
I doubt it, although there's if he pitches, it'll be in September. If the Royals somehow have as good a month as they had a bad month in July, he'll pitch, and they're somehow competing for a wild card. Otherwise, there's no reason for them to push him back. And they don't seem like the kind of organization that would just send him out there so they could bump up his trade value. You know, he's also under contract next year, so there's no reason for them to rush him back. So I'd say there's a 20% chance he pitches again this year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit higher than you, but it's still less than 50%. Probably about 40%.
Mm. Well, I just pulled that number out of my you-know-what, so I could be wrong.
There's no way to prove whether you're going to be right at the end of the season either, so that's the beauty of doing this.
True.
Just wild speculation. All right, yeah. Mike, back to you. The Minnesota Max Keplers, they are just tearing it up right now tonight as we speak. Max Kepler looks like their best hitter.
Yeah, he does, and Sano's, you know, good too. We didn't. There wasn't much for them to do either, and you know the trade they made, they essentially gave up a prospect who, at this point, is kind of a challenge, and whose future might be as a reliever and Alex Myers, so they could rid themselves of Ricky Nolasco's contract. But Hector Santiago is certainly not somebody to sneeze at. I think he's solid. I like him a little bit better than Nolasco going forward. I probably like him more than a little bit better. So that's one of those weird kind of trades you look at for fantasy and sort of shrug, but you can see what both teams are doing. You can see why the Angels, which we'll get into, are doing it, but you can see why the Twins want to free up some money and just get rid of what, you know, turned out to be a really bad contract.
Yeah, San Diego could have some value too, pitching every 5 days or so in Minnesota. That could work out for them. Brett, where do we want to go next? We'll go to the American League West and the Houston Astros. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they did nothing. But the interesting thing is that there's been some movement since the deadline in that they recalled AJ Reed, who I think is going to get some actual playing time now that Valbuena is hurt, and they finally made change at closer. So Ken Giles is now the guy in the ninth there, and the dreaded Will Harris era is finally over. So we'll see if Giles can pitch up to his price tag. He's been very good since those early struggles. I think he'll be fine. I think this job is his from here on out. I'm not that concerned about him moving forward. I think he's I wouldn't call him a safe top 10 closer at this point, but I'd say he's a top half closer right now, even factoring in the risk.
Yeah. Ken Giles, I remember talking in April, and I thought he was like done. It looked awful, so I don't know. It's nice to see him back. It's a good thing. Has anyone written the article about the Peter Principle and Will Harris yet, or no?
No.
He was fine for a while. For what the Astros needed, he did the job.
Yeah, all right, I guess. All right, Mike, speaking of things that are depressing, the Angels, their team is just an absolute disaster right now. Have you looked at their rotation? It's just outside of Shoemaker, it's brutal. And
well, we Brett talked about Skaggs.
Don't do Tyler Skaggs like that. Come on, man.
I was going to say, Skaggs, I'm not as high as Brett is on Skaggs, but Skaggs has a lot of potential. You know, the big news there, you know, Brett, I believe, alluded to, you know, non-trade news. So Houston Street, who looked like a trade target before his ERA kept, you know, sailing like the house and up or the balloons and up, there's a top. he's on the DL, and Cam Bedrosian, who some people have been salivating over for some time, should get the first crack at closing, and he looks pretty good to me. He's somebody who I would go out and make a fairly decent bid for. You know, we mentioned Tony Watson, and and Jake Barrett in our Fab report. He's probably in that group, maybe even a little bit better. So, yeah, Cam Bedrosian, go out and pick him up. Yeah, the rest of the team outside of Mike Trout and Cole Calhoun and, you know, a couple of their pitchers is just really a disaster. Ricky Nolasco moving there helps him maybe a little bit, but Target Field is a pitcher's mark too, so I don't see that really helping him that much. And also, when Ricky Nolasco's bad, he's just bad.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, he did pitch really well with the Dodgers a few years ago, so maybe it's an
LA thing. He had that one year. Yeah. Yep.
Well, you never know with these guys. Brett, Oakland, they traded Josh Reddick. They traded Rich Hill. They've done a couple of things. How do you see things shaking out in the Bay Area for them the rest of the year?
Not particularly well. we'll talk about Rich Hill when we get to the NL West section, but I mean, do you like Jake Smolinski? Because he might play, and maybe the A's will actually start playing Danny Valencia again. I have no idea what the hell they're doing with him. This is just I do not understand.
It's weird.
It's really weird.
It's really weird. Yep.
You'd think that they would have just traded him if they didn't want to play him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm not Billy Beane, so it's just gonna be it's gonna be a mess. There's no one that's gonna get more playing time now that is really worth monitoring anything other than AL only leagues.
Yep. I don't want to talk about Danny Valencia all night because I could. That's my niche, as they say. I think your mm-hmm. niche. Yep. Mike, Seattle. Let's see. Nothing too interesting, but I think the rotation is fascinating. I think like James Paxton's interesting, and he's out there in a ton of leagues. This is a fun squad. I know you've written about Leonis Martin a little bit recently. They're an interesting team, especially with Edwin Diaz stepping into the closer role.
Yeah, Diaz obviously is somebody I won't talk about him too long, Brett, because I know you dropped him in tout like hours before that was announced. But
no,
yeah, Diaz looks terrific, and if he's out there for some reason, should be grabbed. Whit Miley's out. Tyon Walker should be coming back soon. He's on a rehab, so I think he slides in, or maybe he slides in a start later. But Walker is owned or should be owned just about everywhere. So, yeah, you know, it's just Miley pretty much and not much else in terms of movement for Seattle.
I like James Paxton. I just want to throw that out there again. He had a nice start against the Red Sox the other day too. So, Brett, Texas, they maybe made more moves than anybody at this deadline. They're probably the most interesting team in terms of now they have Beltran hitting in the heart of that order. They have Jonathan Lucroy. This is a good lineup, like top to bottom. It's really good.
It's a really good lineup, and they're going to go, assuming they make the playoffs, they're going to go in with 1-2 of Hamels and Darvish, which is not too shabby. No. Lucroy gets probably a slight knockdown in value going to Texas just because of my NLAL theory and the fact that Milwaukee's just an extremely friendly park regardless. But he'll still be very valuable. Then Beltran is Beltran. I fully expect Carlos Beltran to hit like 400 with 15 home runs the rest of the season and just do the exact same thing in the playoffs just because he's Carlos Beltran. But they'll mix him in. They'll get him some at bats at DH to keep him fresh, and I don't see him slowing down this year. This has been it's been a crazy year for him, and he just keeps hitting.
When Nomar Mazara bats seventh for you, you have a damn good lineup. Like, that's insane. I think they're the most likely team to try and just go dominate with their bullpen late. Like, it sounds weird because they don't have a lot of big names, but they have a lot of guys who are pitching well. They really have like five or six guys now, and Dyson, Diekman, Kila, Bush, and now they added Jeffries as well. So they definitely have a strong bullpen too. So they're going to be a team to watch in the playoffs. I'm excited about what the Rangers did. Let's move over to the National League, and I guess we'll start with your guys' favorite team, the New York Mets, who you got Jay Bruce. That's about all I know, right? That's it, pretty much, right?
And John Neese.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. That's something.
Mike, you take this one. I don't want to talk about Jay Bruce.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny. So the one fantasy takeaway here, remember at the beginning of the year, nobody wanted to touch Bruce in NL only because the assumption was he'd get traded to an American League team. That is bargain city. I got him in one league where you can't keep players traded out for like $10. And, you know, even if you thought he was going to be a stiff this year, that's just a steal in an only. The thing about Bruce is he should be fine. They're going to try to cycle outfielders, though, which is just a bad fantasy valuation. But the other side of this is so many of the Mets just aren't hitting, and their numbers with runners in scoring position are historically bad, and there are a lot of debates. And this is depressing, Brett. There are a lot of debates about how much of it's luck, how much of it's skill. So everyone's value kind of takes a hit. If Yoán Cespedes is healthy and does wind up getting past a sore quad of his, you're probably going to see some weird cycling of Bruce and Granderson and Michael Conforto and D'Aza. Michael Conforto is the guy, if you're holding out hope for him, he seems likely to lose the most playing time, and he's the guy in, I'd say, you know, 14-team mix, 12-team mix, and a non-keeper that I would just drop.
I'm getting a strong Xander Bogaerts 2014 vibe with Michael Conforto, where he's really good. They're kind of messing with him a little bit in and out of the lineup. I feel like he's going to have a good year next year.
His wrist is bothering him too, and he he just hasn't looked quite right with his swing.
Yeah, if he gets back, he's a guy who could be a steal next year. So jot that down in your notes if you're listening right now. I don't want to talk about the Atlanta Braves, but I guess we have to, Brett. Anything there that we should discuss?
I think we covered that before with Kemp, though.
Yeah, Matt Kemp. Other than that, nothing.
Albies and Swanson, any movement there?
I don't know. I'm not convinced that we see them.
Okay. Neither am I, for what it's worth. Mike, Miami. I'm trying to remember what they did. They always do something strange.
You know, the biggest...
They traded
biggest
for Cashner.
Yeah. Well, the biggest... trade back. Yeah, well, the biggest impact there is, yeah, they traded Rhea back, but the biggest impact there might be D. Gordon coming back, and that's going to be a huge impact for them. So, yeah, they got Cashner, and I don't think much of Cashner at this point for fantasy. I'm finally over him. Colin Ray, after one start, was hurt. That was pretty much their big move. Justin Bour is on a rehab assignment, so if you're waiting on him or if somebody dropped him, you know, in your 12 or 14 team mix or somewhere in that range, he's somebody maybe worth stashing right now.
Jose Fernandez still good at last check, so there's yeah. That.
I like that guy.
I get a sense he's going to be pretty good. Brett, the Nationals, they finally are playing Trey Turner. Give him a round of applause for that. Daniel Murphy's a better hitter than Mike Trout over the last calendar year. Everything seems to be pretty good there in our nation's capital. Strasburg's pitching well. This is high times right now, the Nationals.
It definitely is. It is amazing that they took this long to play Trey Turner, and he's been great. He's been stealing bases. He's been doing exactly what most people who were high on Trey Turner coming into the year thought he was going to do. He's been hitting at the top of the lineup. He's going to score runs. He's going to steal bases. He'll probably end up with with 20 plus steals, even with the limited playing time. Other than that, you got Mark Melanson, who stays, you know, about the same in valuation, coming over from Pittsburgh. Papelbon obviously gets the boot out of the closer spot, and that's more or less it. I mean, they're a really good team from top to bottom.
Yep, they're going to be there at the end. They're going to be pretty good in the playoffs. Mike, the Phillies. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I like their rotation a lot. Like, if you look at, like, Aaron Nola to me stands out. I was doing some research for last week's free agent pickups column, and Aaron Nola has the biggest gap between his actual earned run average and his DRA, deserved run average, of any starter in baseball with at least 100 innings this year. It's crazy how unlucky he's really been.
He's been unlucky, and the issues he's had have been with command and consistency. So, you know, it's not a case where the velocity's down or he's giving up a lot of hard hits or any markers where you're like, oh boy, you know, I know the DRA says he's good, or I know the FIP says he's good, but I'm worried about him. He looks fine. He should be okay. He's definitely somebody, if someone in your league has him and has given up on him, is a pretty good target for next year. And yeah, they didn't trade Jeremy Hellickson. There was a lot of debate about that. And, you know, I heard Matt Klentak today talking about that. And it's kind of understandable when you listen to him giving, this is all I'm saying, when you listen to really smart general managers like Cashman and Klentak talk about baseball, if you're one of those people on Twitter who sits there and is like, you know, I don't understand why, you know, Jeremy Hellickson wasn't traded, you sound like you feel like a moron. It's like, well, you know, these guys know what they're doing. But given the pitching market, it makes complete sense why they're willing to wait until this winter. You know, last winter, Mike Leake got how much money, you know, from the Cardinals? And I'm not saying Hellickson is even as good as Leake, but it's certainly reasonable to think that they could trade him this winter and get a fairly decent return.
Yeah, I've talked enough about Jeremy Hellickson in the last 2 weeks or so for one lifetime. I think I'm good there. Brett, let's go to the NL Central, and I guess we touched on Chapman earlier, but is there anything else with Chicago? I'm on their roster resource page, and it says on the bench, Javier Baez. So they seem to be pretty loaded.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not surprising that they didn't really do much besides get Chapman. I mean, the team is really good. They have Javi Baez doing Javi Baez things. Addison Russell is
good lately.
Yeah, he's been showing improvement. They you know, they just seem to, you know, if they could ever get Jason Hayward going, that would be I'm sure a welcome change for them, but. With that rotation and now that bullpen and the heart of that lineup, that's a really good team.
Maybe don't start Brian Mattis anymore though.
Probably, yeah. That seems like a reasonable request.
Yeah, we haven't given Kyle Hendricks enough of a shout out this year either. He's been fantastic, and yep. John Lester's their fifth starter, apparently. So life is pretty good in Chicago. The Reds, Mike, anything interesting here? We can kind of roll through these quickly because they're not.
Yeah, just really quickly, I did hear somebody, one of the Reds beats say today that Scott Schebler will get a real opportunity to play, which if you're holding on to Jesse Winker for this year, that's bad news. So Schebler is kind of the sneaky NL-only 20 mix pickup.
Yep. Brett, Milwaukee, they called up Orlando Arcia. I almost said Oswaldo Arcia. I had to check myself there.
you've got Oswaldo on the brain.
It's it usually ends with a swing and a miss when you do that. But
yeah.
And the occasional 500-foot home run in AAA. I digress. The Brewers, Arcia, I think, is maybe the most interesting story for them, other than them trading away Luke Roy.
Yeah, Arcia is interesting. I honestly, I'm more interested in Andrew Susak than I am in Orlando Arcia for right now. I'm curious to see whether they call him up and play in the last 2 months just to get a look at him. I think Arcia is completely overrated in fantasy. I'm just really not. He was not hitting particularly well in AAA. He's got a little bit of speed, but that's really about it. Susak's got some pop, and that ballpark is a good place to have some pop. And you know, all things considered, he'll probably be one of the better hitters on the team when he comes up, considering who else they're trotting out there. So,
and Ben Carsley, if you're listening, I just saw Garen Cecchini on the roster resource page for the Brewers, so he's still alive. That's just a status update for you there.
And you got Tyler Thornburg shutting down games now too. So.
It's pretty crazy there in Milwaukee, Pittsburgh.
Leave the puns to me, George. Just no, never do that again.
That was pretty bad. The Pirates, they traded away a bunch of pieces from their starting rotation, and now it looks like it's worse. Garrett Cole's still there, but
Ryan Vogelsong is going to be in the rotation. So yes,
this team is like. It's weird looking.
The weirdest thing, and you know, this is more of a baseball than a fantasy, but they traded, and this just felt icky to me. They traded real prospects away to save themselves some money on Francisco Liriano, and I know this has nothing to do with fantasy, but I just don't like trades like that. It feels kind of icky. Yeah, the rest of it for fantasy. Ivan Nova, you know, the park helps him, but he's Ivan Nova. One thing I feel is worth pointing out, and some of this is because the pitchers aren't as good, but the whether it's by FIP or DRA, the Pirates are at the bottom this year. And, you know, when Jim Benedict left for the Marlins, some speculated it was him more than Ray Searidge that was part of the Ray Searidge miracle. And it's just 1 year of data, or less than a year. You can't take that too seriously. But it's going to be worth digging into this offseason and maybe next year to see if there's something to that.
Yep. They also dumped Mark Melanson, so we talked about it.
Yeah.
Tony Watson's closing.
Tony Watson will close. Naftali Feliz is worth a stash in deep leagues. And Felipe Rivero is an interesting arm for the future.
Yep. Brett, the Cardinals, anything really quick? I think Sungwon Oh is still going to hold down the closing spot because no one seems to know what's up with Trevor Rosenthal, to be honest with you.
No, and I don't think he's really worth worrying about what's up with. The most interesting man in St. Louis right now, though, is Jed Jerko, who looked like he was going to lose playing time with Matt Carpenter coming back, but now all of a sudden Aledmys Diaz is hurt and might be done for close to the year with a hairline fracture. And Jerko has just been hitting bombs, lots and lots of bombs. Hit another one tonight, and that gives him, I think, 17 on the season. He might end up with 25 home runs by the end of the season, and that would be incredible.
He's done it before, though. He did it I think it was his rookie year in San Diego. He had like 24.
It was in the 20s. wasn't quite that high, but it's. You know, people have spent the last couple of years being apologists for Jed Jerko, and you know, that is, you know, the second half from last year is pretending a little bit more success than I think some of the doubters thought. I mean, he hit 13 home runs in the second half last year, and he's been showing that pop all the way through. It's come with the a low-ish batting average, but you know, who cares if it's that many home runs and that cheap.
Yep. All right, so we're going to roll through the final division here real quick because I know, Brett, you got to run here. But, Mike, the Dodgers, they maybe made the most moves of anybody on the NL side, picking up Rich Hill, Josh Reddick, a couple other pieces. So they designated Yasiel Puig for assignment, so there's been a lot going on here.
Yeah, the Puig thing was really the big news and was the usual firestorm around Yasiel Puig, but at this point, there's no doubting that his value has dropped. As far as everyone else who was traded, you know, not much really changes. You know, Josh Reddick is Josh Reddick, and will do what he does. And Rich Hill is injured right now and on the DL, and if he's healthy, he'll be very good, and we just don't know if he'll be healthy.
Clayton Kershaw, what do we think at this point? I'll ask Brett, because we kind of talked about it last week, Mike, but Brett, what do you think about Kershaw?
I still think he'll be back in September. It would be a real shame if he was done for the year. But I have a hard time believing that that's it for him.
Yeah, it's been a tough week for injuries, and that goes for the next team we're going to talk about, the Colorado Rockies. Losing Trevor Story likely for the remainder of the season. He was leading the all rookies 27 home runs this year. I mean, he's been fantastic, but he's likely done for the season. So Colorado, Brett, what's going to happen there?
Not much.
David Dahl.
I mean, David Dahl is great, and unfortunately, Story was pretty much the one guy who got hurt that would not open up playing time for Dahl if they moved things around and decided to if they decided he wasn't going to be in their entirety of their plans for the rest of the year. But I don't see them getting rid of Dahl. I see him playing the rest of the way, and I see him being pretty good.
Okay. Mike, the last team that made some big moves we need to talk about are the Giants. They picked up Matt Moore. We already talked about Eduardo Nunez earlier, but they did some stuff here. They got Will Smith, too, in the back end of that. Their bullpen's really good.
Yeah, although Casillas struggled of late. I know he's kind of more been back and forth and struggled. So, Smith and Romo and to a lesser Hunter Strickland are all people worth keeping an eye on. One thing we didn't mention, or at least we might have glossed over as far as the Moore trade, we mentioned Nunez before with Matt Duffy heading to Tampa and apparently saddening most of Giants Twitter. But on the baseball side, that means Nunez will play. Some people thought that he was going to be more of a super utility guy, but he'll play regularly. That's the big news there. The Giants are always one of those teams, too, who it just wouldn't surprise me if they pull off one of those waiver deals, because they always do that. And that's just something that I'd expect. Now, I'm not really the biggest Matt Moore fan, but moving to the National League, moving to that park is obviously going to help him.
Yep, I like the move for more value long term. I think it's going to be fine. Brett, the last two teams, Arizona and San Diego, anything there that you think is relevant we should discuss? Or
no, I don't. I'm not depressed enough to talk about Jabari Balash.
Shelby Biller wasn't traded.
Shocker.
I think I traded a draft pick in TDGX for Jabari Balash. So good move. Good move by me, fantasy expert over here.
Although you did dump Francisco Liriano to me while he still had some value.
That's true. I got out ahead of the curve there.
You guys should take this little segment here, and this is how Tino should start. It should just be a seamless transition.
There have been some brutal trades in TDGX this year. There are some bad ones. I've been on the both ends of some of them, but I digress. We're pretty much done, guys. So this has been fun. We should do this maybe every couple of months, just go through every team and talk.
Yeah, I enjoy the round table.
Yeah, this has been fun. All right, so I'm gonna wrap things up right now. This is it. Thanks, as my dog is barking outside.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, something's going on. I might need to go address that. So. Wrapping it up real quick. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 100 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballperspectives.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. I said that too fast, but super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. It's a lot of fun. You should do it. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's 2 S's and 2 L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. If you want to email us, it's flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. If you've been listening the whole way through this one, we appreciate it. For Mike Gianella and Brett Sayer, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until the next show, so long, everybody.
See you in 2 weeks. Well, unless you're going to do this by yourself.
Well, we maybe should have talked about that.